fitter, happier. A program about your health for your health.
Good morning and welcome to Fitter Happier. Next Tuesday is Ida Hobbit Day, the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, Interphobia and Transphobia. This day is an annual celebration of sexual and gender diversities and most importantly, raises awareness about the work still needed to combat discrimination and violence towards LGBTIQA plus people around the world. Joining us this morning to discuss the importance of Ida Hobbit Day is Jane Armstrong. They are a clinical nurse specialist and LGBTIQ plus project officer in the mental health division from the Royal Perth Bentley Group. Good morning, Jane, and welcome to the program.
Hello, darling. How are you?
Very well. Very excited to have you on. I enjoy our chats as always. And so our first question is very important. So can you tell us more about Ida Hobbit? And is it just a day for members of the LGBTIQA plus community?
Absolutely. It's a really exciting day because what it signifies is basically the day that the World Health Organization removed the diagnosis, I suppose, of anything to do with LGBTIQ plus from the classification of diseases, and which is really significant because it's not a disease, despite what some of our current pollies might think, and really it's a day for everybody. So for the community, it's a day to celebrate for us. It's a day to recognise each other and be allies to each other. But it's also for non-community members to be allies. And I guess an ally really is someone who listens to, believes, amplifies the LGBTIQ plus voice. It's standing up to discrimination. It's calling it out when you see it. So it's a really, really significant day.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, it's for both allies and LGBTIQ plus people. Absolutely. In that community, which is so important. So how big of an issue is discrimination for LGBTIQA plus young people? And how do these people how do their experiences affect their mental health and well-being overall?
Oh, gosh. We've only got a few minutes. realistically, discrimination to the LGBTIQ plus members of the community is still huge. You only need to look at what the pollies are saying. Catherine Deaves, for example, ScoMo, for example, to see that discrimination and xenophobia is everywhere. The whole idea of transgender folks, it's being used as this political football. So it's being thrown back in transgender and gender diverse people's faces every single day. And the Human Rights Commission released a paper some time ago, probably about 6 months ago now, and actually talked about the fact that someone who's transgender or gender diverse faces 60 plus events of discrimination per day. That's per day. So you can only imagine what the deleterious effects are on their mental health. You know, it means greater amounts of depression and anxiety. I think one of the studies that was undertaken with our youth, LGBTIQ plus youth, shows that something like 75% to 80% has depression and anxiety, and that's diagnosed. There's a greater propensity, something like 16 to 18 times more likely to attempt suicide than the general population, which sits at about 3%. So we see that these events that are happening on a day-to-day basis are really, really having this negative flow-on effect for our transgender and gender diverse youth, as well as, you know, our lesbian and gay and queer youth as well.
It's a serious issue, and what you were saying
it's
before...
huge.
huge issue about how it's become like a political football. It's just being handed off to through different politicians. You know, we're constantly hearing about these issues, but nothing is really being done to combat it in a sense. I want to know a little bit more about the effects of the pandemic. So it's been a mentally challenging time for a lot of young people and just people in general. But in specific, how has the pandemic impacted LGBTIQ plus youth?
Look, I think for everybody, it's been a really, really hard time. I think what we're seeing is, particularly for our youth, is the isolation. You know, I've read of case studies and spoken to colleagues in the eastern states where particularly our youth working in hospitality, and that's certainly one of the arenas where a lot of our LGBTIQ plus youth work. And, you know, we saw during lockdowns and restriction times that a lot of them lost their jobs, which then had the flow-on effect of them not being able to pay their rent, which then went on the flow-on effect of increased homelessness. And if they fought hard against homelessness, what were they doing to earn their money? A number of folks turned to, unfortunately, sex work. And that's a number of case studies that I've heard from coming across in the eastern states. Increased depression and anxiety. It's you know, there's a disproportionate impact on LGBTIQ plus folks. We've already got inequalities around our health outcomes. However, this has just been, I guess, another barrier to health outcomes. Then you've got, because LGBTIQ plus folks are more likely to smoke cigarettes, this has increased over COVID. It then puts them at greater risk of coronavirus pneumonia. So you've got these things that, you know, the general population don't even really think about, which has impacted on the community.
So there's huge issues at hand, and I think, you know, folks are more, you know, LGBTIQ plus, as you were saying, folks are more inclined to face, as you were saying, the studies were, you know, more inclined to smoke cigarettes, which can cause, you know, COVID and then pneumonia and things like that. And unfortunately, through the pandemic, as you were saying, people were having issues paying rent because they weren't able to find a job, and then that, you know, vaulted to sex work. And it's really just, yeah, some of the things you're saying are really quite awful and sad. And I think us talking about it is really bringing it to light. So I want to know, what kind of the barriers do LGBTIQ plus people face when navigating the health system?
Look, it comes down to what I said earlier. Trans and gender diverse folks face 60 events of discrimination per day. And what that does, I guess, is lead to this lack of trust, lack of faith in institutions. And essentially, health is an institution. And, you know, it's still this overall lack of, now I'm generalising, but lack of cognizance, lack of education. And it's that whole thing, people don't know what they don't know. But if you go into a GP and you tell them, I don't know, for example, you've got a urinary tract infection, and the GP turns around and goes, well, you know, I'm not going to give you antibiotics before I do a physical examination. Now, if you're someone who has transitioned, you may not want to actually go through a physical examination, but you can't get the help you need unless you have a physical examination. So it's these ongoing things which raise, I guess, barriers. So, you know, it's the multiple discriminations, it's the multiple multiple barriers that you face. And that, you know, for that example, that's actually a real example that happened here in Perth. And it wasn't because the GP was trying to be malicious or anything. It's just they didn't understand. And you know, there's discrimination within the LGBTIQ plus community as well. You know, there's still multiple layers of discrimination in our intersectionalities. So, for example, if you have a disability and you're trans, then that adds different layers of difficulty in accessing health. And I guess the biggest way that can be combated is through education. And Ida Hobbit, realistically, is a huge opportunity for not only the community but the allies to educate, correct people's language. Being deadnamed all the time is a huge knock to someone's mental health. So if we can at least get the pronouns and the preferred names right and how the person identifies right, then we're a little way towards making it an easier ride for the community.
For sure. I think, yeah, what you were saying about, especially, you know, we live in such a kind of cisgendered society, and in the fact that what you were saying, I had no idea about going to a doctor's surgery and obviously getting a physical examination. Those things are barriers for people who are trans, or you know, it's things that I don't, as somebody who identifies as a woman, don't have to think about in that sense, but can understand how debilitating or how damaging that could be to, you know, have
one
to go into these.
We have seen across COVID is the massive increase of domestic violence. And that has been for cisgender and heterosexual people, as well as the LGBTIQ plus community. A study was done in the UK where there's been an increase in reporting of domestic abuse within the LGBTIQ plus community of 30% or more. So what that can look like is things like, you know, if you don't do what I say, I'll let everybody know that you're gay, or I'll tell everybody that you identify in this way. And there's that coercion and control. And then there's obviously the physical and sexual and psychological abuse that happens as well. So that's another complication that the LGBTI community faces, a barrier to accessing not only health, but to any service.
For sure. There's that manipulation involved, and I can't even imagine kind of what people are going through in that sense. I want to talk about a little bit more about your involvement within healthcare, Jane. At Royal Perth Hospital, you're a part of the Rainbow Tick Working Group, which has challenged some of the tackled some of the challenges LGBTIQ plus people face within healthcare. Can you tell us a little bit more about this group and what it involves?
Sure. Well, it's the Mental Health Division, which is part of the Royal Perth Met Me Group. And a few years ago, we set out to undertake the Rainbow Tick accreditation, which basically means, in simple terms, it shows everyone in the community that we are a safe, inclusive service, which means that when you come in, we'll use your pronouns. We will provide you with care that is inclusive and person-centred. It's funny, some of the barriers that have been for us is that people turn around and go, oh, we're already providing a person-centred service within mental health. And you know, whilst that's true, it's not truly person-centred if you're not recognising the person's preferred name or pronouns, or, you know, their increased level of risk because they are gender diverse, anything like that. So it's more about inclusivity and being a safe space.
So it's important we support LGBTIQ plus people throughout the year, not just on days like Ida Hobbit, for example. How can people show their support each and every day?
Well, call stuff out. If you hear discrimination or you see discrimination, you have to call it out. You know, it's simple stuff. You know, things that are written in notes or anywhere really, where someone's preferred name isn't used and it's their dead name. And for any of your listeners who don't know what a dead name is, it's a name that they were assigned at birth that they chose not to use when they transitioned. So it's their name that they now prefer to go by. You know, it's really standing along the community and showing, yep, we're with you. It's supporting people when they're facing crises to do with their gender or sexuality. You know, we're still getting reports of youth being booted out of their home because they identify within the LGBTIQ plus community. And those numbers are all too high. So really it's advocacy, it's calling out bad behaviour. And I guess, you know, I've had my little rant earlier, but, you know, why isn't someone calling the pollies out on their bad behaviour?
Of course, and also checking in on yourself and seeing how, you know, you can do better as an individual and checking someone's pronouns. And we had a chat about this before when you came on a few months ago, Jane, but the whole importance of identifying someone with their preferred pronouns, whether that means asking them first. And I know now on Instagram and even email addresses as well, people use their pronouns and label their pronouns in their profile or label it in their emails. So there are ways in which we ourselves can be checking ourselves and also, you know, using correct pronouns for other people and yeah, giving them that respect, because it is out there and all you have to do is ask in that sense.
So absolutely. And sometimes it's as simple as going, hi, my name's Jane. My pronouns are they, them and theirs. How would you like me to address you today?
For sure.
It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as you say, having our pronouns on our email signatures and our profiles for social media, it's not hard.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's not hard as well if you yourself are unsure and you know, you can go on social media. If you're somebody who uses social media and can do that easy check, it's as simple as that, and also asking the person the question as well if you are unsure. So, Jane, for people who are struggling with their mental health, especially regarding their personal identity or discrimination they have experienced because of it, what can they do for help?
Look, I always advocate to check in with your GP first. You know, GPs these days, the ones certainly that I work with, are really on top of things. But you've also got places like, and these are online and via phone. So you've got QLife, which is a counselling service. You've got Transfolk, which are supportive, they're online. Lifeline are very, very good. It's certainly, you don't need to suffer in silence. And you know, check in with people. Most of us now have someone in our immediate circle that identify within the LGBTIQ plus community. Check in with them, get some support, reach out.
For sure. There are many ways that, you know, we can obviously check on our friends and family and loved ones as well. And as you were saying, you know, we do have people within our immediate, you know, most of us do have people within our immediate close circle who are LGBTIQ plus under that umbrella. And, you know, it is important to check on them. And as you were saying as well, if you need help as well, go to your GP. And obviously talk to somebody who you trust as well. Yeah, thank you so much for joining us on RTR, Jane. We appreciate your time here as always.
Pleasure.
I'm always having the most interesting conversations with you and the most amazing conversations, and I always learn so much from you. So thank you. I look forward to having you back on the program very soon.
Thank you so much. Love chatting to you. Bye.
Bye. That was Jane Armstrong, clinical nurse specialist from the Mental Health Division at Royal Perth Bentley Group, speaking with us about the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, Interphobia and Transphobia, an annual celebration of sexual and gender diversities, and most importantly, raising awareness about the work that still needs to be combated against discrimination and violence towards LGBTIQA plus people around the world. For more information, check out idahobbit.org.au.